welcome to another podcast by Air Insight.
This is Addison Shonland, and today is March the 11th, 2020, and my guest today is Richard Goodhead, Senior Vice President, Marketing, Civil Aerospace at Rolls-Royce. Richard, thank you so much for being on the call with me.
You're welcome.
We're going to talk about all matters Rolls-Royce here for a while. So could we start with an update on the status of the Trent 1000 and other models, focusing on where the company is, the current and the current impact on airlines?
Sure, and thanks, Addison. It's a pleasure to be with you and talking again. So I'm glad we're addressing this particular question up front. Firstly, I would want to start by recognizing that this is an issue that has caused totally unacceptable levels of customer disruption, and we do sincerely apologize for that and regret the disruption we've caused. But more positively, as our chief executive said at our recent results, we're actually making real progress, and all of the issues that were forming part of the issues that the Trent 1000 was experiencing are either now addressed or a solution is well advanced, and our aim remains to get AOGs to single digits by the mid-year. So we continue to work hard on the issue. We've strengthened our care network. We've introduced new techniques, for example, near aircraft service solutions. We've introduced new and improved parts. And as you'd expect, we're keeping our customers informed on all these developments. So when we've resolved these issues, our aim is that we will be a stronger, more agile service company as a result of all that we've learned in that experience.
So then if one considers the selection by Air New Zealand and All Nippon of GE on their reorders, their 787 reorders, do you have any concern that customers are starting to defect? What can you do to keep customers loyal to the brand?
Well, in terms of order selections, we've had great successes and we've had some disappointments, as you do with any program where there's engine choice. And while we've not been selected in certain cases, we have also had some really important selections, for example, within the last year or so, Lufthansa and Air Premier. And I think it's worth remembering that the issues that we have experienced have related to durability, and the engine has actually always demonstrated outstanding reliability, just like all of the other Trents. So without being complacent, we remain confident that customers will increasingly see the advantages of the Trent 1000 as the durability issues are addressed. And in terms of other models that are relatively recent entered into service, then we've seen outstanding performance for both the Trent XWB and the Trent 7000, which to some extent have learnt, or we've been able to apply the lessons learned from the Trent 1000. And the Trent XWB has certainly proven itself to be the most efficient large aero engine in service today, also demonstrated outstanding reliability with lead engines in service now for more than 3,500 cycles or 22,000 hours without shop visit. And similarly, the Trent 7000, we've now got more than 100 of those engines operating with 12 airlines. They've accumulated more than 200,000 flying hours with more than 99.9% dispatch reliability and zero in-flight shutdowns. So looking at that broader context, then the Trent family overall remains an incredible success story. Over indeed the last 25 years, as we've accumulated 145 million engine flying hours. And that's why we've been celebrating that fact recently with our Power of Trent messaging. And that story continues. Last year, we won around two-thirds, I think it was 64% of all wide-body selections. So while we have a few disappointments along the way, we're still very confident in the family as a whole, and given that we've got over 2,000 Trent engines to deliver yet, there's still much more growth to come in the years ahead.
Okay. If we focus on the future with the Advance and Ultrafan programs, Rolls-Royce has started manufacturing the largest ever blades for the Ultrafan. What benefits can we expect from this next generation of engine, and what are the innovative concepts, materials, technologies that will drive the program to obtain the improvements that everybody is looking for?
So we describe the Ultrafan as the ultimate turbofan because we envisage it transforming gas turbine technology. It will offer 25% fuel efficiency improvement over the first generation Trent, and it will be available towards the end of this decade. So we started building the blades for that demonstrator engine, and that engine will go on test in 2021. We've already run the core of that engine. The Advanced 3 core ran just over a year and a half ago, and we've got good data from that. And so we've run the core. We're going to now building the LP system, and that new whole UltraFan demonstrator engine will be the largest fan diameter in the world at 140 inches. And for those familiar with it, you could drive a London tube train through a fan set of that size. It's that big.
Wow.
So to test an engine of that size, then we've built a new testbed, so-called Testbed 80. That's nearing completion now in Derby in the UK. And that will be the largest testbed of its kind in the world. You talked about, you asked about what technologies might be in that engine. Well, there's a whole raft. Whether you look at it as a pure technology or new materials or architectures, there's a whole host of goodies going into that engine. But let me focus on just a few. So I mentioned the Advanced 3 core. That is a new engine core architecture for Rolls-Royce. That is designed to deliver maximum fuel burn efficiency and low emissions by getting a new level of thermal efficiency out of a core. And then we're marrying that with a geared design. As engines get bigger and we increase the bypass ratio, we are looking for ways in which to ensure that the LP turbine doesn't get too big. And when you get to a certain size, it makes sense to delete the LP turbine and gear the fan off the IP turbine through a reduction gearbox. That will be a high thrust, high bypass ratio engine with a very, very efficient gearbox capable of handling huge amounts of power to translate the power from the turbine to the fan. And we recently set an industry world thrust record for a gearbox of 70,000 horsepower during testing at our facility in Dahlewitz in Germany. And then what that gearbox is effectively turning is a new fan system, a carbon titanium fan system, both the blades being carbon titanium composite and the fan case being a carbon composite. And at that size of engine, it roughly reduces the engine weight by about 700 kilograms, which, depending on the average weight of the passenger, is of the order of 7 passengers worth just flying effectively weight-free. And while that's a fun statistic, the purpose of that improvement really, and of all of these improvements, is to increase the efficiency and thereby reduce the environmental impact. So we see this as a really exciting time, actually. We've got all the building blocks ready to be integrated into that demonstrator. And while that demonstrator will be the world's largest fan diameter, I should point out that the technology itself is scalable. So with the vast majority of all of the new technology we're putting into that architecture are scalable and agnostic to engine size. The one potential exception, because it buys a bigger benefit the bigger the engine gets, is the gearbox. And so some of our smaller engines with this architecture would still be direct drive, but as they get bigger, you switch to the gearbox for efficiency purposes. And the reason I mention that is this architecture will be, for us, the architecture suitable right across the engine size piece, from regional through narrow body through wide body. And at the risk of turning this into a bit of an Oscar speech, I just want to take this opportunity to thank some of the funding agencies we're working with who have helped to get us to this point. They include Clean Sky, Innovate UK, BASE, ATI, and LUFO.
So, you said it was an Oscar speech. That was quite cute. Can you explain where Rolls-Royce sees the two engines going in terms of wide, or let's say single aisles and twin aisles? I mean,
So as I say, the UltraFan architecture for us is the solution for any and all of those opportunities. Our strategy is to make sure that we have a competitive technical solution that would be competitive for any size of engine opportunity from an airframer that presents itself to us, such that the conversation becomes more one from a Rolls-Royce perspective of does it make commercial sense rather than have we got the capability to do an engine, because we've just proven by running this demonstrator engine that we have the latter.
So I guess what I mean in that question, maybe a better way of putting it, is the UltraFan thrust band, if you like, starts at what level and goes to what level in the as you look forward, when you say...
So
you know,
broadly speaking, we would see an UltraFan architecture being anywhere between 30 to 100 plus.
30 to over 100.
Yeah, below 30, as I mentioned earlier, the engine is of such a size that the gearbox tends not to buy its way on in terms of the cost benefit. You are basically putting as much weight back into the engine as you're saving if you get the engine below that size. And that's why, as we've recently demonstrated with our Pearl engines, that we've been running the advanced program at both Advanced 2 and Advanced 3, though that number commensurate with the number of shafts in the engine. So the core technology is very similar, and then whether we have a gearbox or not depends on the size of the engine.
Richard, there's another aspect to what Rolls-Royce has been working on that's very, very interesting, is the hybrid electric. You guys are doing some, I believe it's with Cranfield and Woodrow that you're doing some experimenting. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so hybrid electric technology is part of our broader sustainability strategy, which is made up of three main pillars. We'll continue to improve gas turbines and the integration of the airframe and the engine. We are very much supportive of a substantial scaling up of sustainable aviation fuel production. And then thirdly, acceleration of disruptive technologies such as hybrid electric power. So that basically reflects our position that the medium to long haul market will still be needing gas turbines and therefore sustainable aviation fuel as solutions for some time yet, simply because of the limitations on power density of batteries. So we're involved in a range of electric and hybrid electric demonstrator programs, right from the small size personal mobility vehicles through to very short range and regional size aircraft. And perhaps the most significant of those is our eFanX project we're working on together with Airbus. And that uses a hybrid electric propulsion system to power a specially converted aeroplane. Now, the technology going into the aeroplane is not necessarily designed to be powering an aeroplane of the size of the donor aeroplane we're using, because this is a technology demonstrator, not an attempt to electrify or hybridize a regional jet. But this is about understanding how to do this kind of hybrid electric technology at altitude in an airworthy environment. And so within that, Rolls-Royce is responsible for the power generation system and the associated power electronics, along with complete responsibility of the electric propulsion unit. So, and that includes a 2-megawatt e-motor and inverter, and the generator will be the most powerful generator ever to have flown. So we're really pushing the boundary here in terms of seeing what this new technology could do. And we've already carried out lots of tests. So we've carried out tests on that power generator at our facility in Trondheim in Norway, and we're planning tests of the entire power generation system in Bristol in the UK later this year. And then we'll combine that system of ours with Airbus elements at their facility in Ottobrunn in Germany. And all of that starts to come together to support an eFanX demonstrator first flight late next year in 2021. The understanding that we gain from eFanX and any of the other demonstrator programs that we're looking at open up opportunities to potentially bring small electric or hybrid electric City Hopper aircraft to market in the shorter term, and depending on the size of the aircraft, possibly even by the end of the decade.
Richard, when you talk about this hybrid electric, it's not quite clear to me. Are we talking about looking at a replacement for a turbofan or a turboprop? What is the primary focus for Rolls-Royce? Which of those two?
So it could be either. Because what a hybrid electric system allows you to do fundamentally at its most basic is it allows you to decouple the power generation that you take from an engine to turn into propulsive force. So in a normal gas turbine, the core creates the power which you extract through a shaft and you use to drive a fan. In a hybrid electric solution, what you could do is retain the core gas turbine to very, very efficiently generate power which you use to create electricity, and then you distribute that electricity to power smaller distributed fans around the aircraft. And while there will be some losses incurred in that solution, there are potentially greater advantages to be gained because you are increasing the level of propulsive efficiency through that distributed architecture. You still, under that architecture, need a gas turbine to create the very efficient amounts of power in the first place, but you do open up more design freedom to exploit opportunities to get efficiency.
Right. I mean, the reason I'm asking that for that clarification is because at the Paris show last year, Embraer made a point of talking about what is known officially amongst the media types as the E3. And John Slattery pointed out, from Embraer, pointed out that the engine technology is not there yet for a higher speed turboprop. And obviously, they must be, like a lot of people, looking very eagerly at what you're doing. You mentioned the Pearl earlier. So you've had great success with the Pearl now on the Globals and on the Gulfstream. How do you feel about the general aviation market? Is it going to be stable? I mean, obviously, we have this coronavirus right now disrupting everything, but it seems of all the parts of the industry least impacted by coronavirus, it seems like biz jets. So how does the top of the market look in the next 10 years? Because that's really the focus for your Pearl engine, right?
Yeah, I mean, business aviation and the market there is very important for Rolls-Royce, and we're proud to have been the market leader for over 20 years now. Last year, I think we had a market share value of roughly 36% by value. And yes, with the new Pearl family, we're indeed well positioned for growth. We do see it in the longer term as a good and stable opportunity and a good market. What will happen in the short term with coronavirus? Well, we'll have to see. But in the longer term, there's good fundamental reasons why the BizLav market, particularly at the long-range, large cabin end of the market, where we are very much the key player, that's where we see the market being in terms of the most growth. So the Pearl 15 entered service last year, and the Pearl 700 is well on track with the recent start of the flight test campaign.
Now for something completely different. In the U.S., the long talk about the B-52 re-engine program.
Yes.
Apparently, you guys are chasing that business like everybody else is, like the other two guys. I understand that the BR-700 is a candidate for that program. What can you tell us about that without compromising any information?
Yeah, okay. So the BR-725 would be the version of the BR-700 that we are talking about here, and that's been outstanding since its entry into service in 2012, and it's now accrued more than a million flying hours on the G650 and G650ER, which, as you know, flies faster and further than any other ultra-long-range corporate aircraft. In that time, it's set more than 100 city pair records and the furthest, fastest flight in BizAv history from Singapore to Tucson in Arizona. The military version of that engine, which is designated the F-130, we believe would be a perfect fit for the B-52. It's proven, it's affordable, it's a modern propulsion system. And we've actually completed full engine testing on that variant with this application in mind in Indianapolis. And that's where any F-130 engines would be assembled and tested should we win the campaign. The F-130 engine itself is actually already in service in the U.S. Air Force fleet because they've got some of the Gulfstream aircraft there. So we're confident that the F-130 will be a highly competitive offering for that program, and we expect to get an RFP and compete hard for that opportunity.
Would that be 8 engines or 4 engines?
I think it's 4, but obviously it depends on what they decide to do with the thrust requirements for the aeroplane,
right.
But I think it's 4.
That would be, that it wouldn't be your grandfather's B-52 then.
the more the merrier, really, from an engine manufacturer.
I'm sure you'd rather have 8 engines than 4. Okay.
Well, we're offering a 16-engine version. <from away.
laughs> Okay. Now, one of the things that is really, digital twins and big data has been helping companies identify and solve engine problems on the wing. What can you tell us about, at Rolls-Royce, the experience you've had with big data? And how is that impacting MRO?
So we can use data to analyze issues on the wing, but the real value we see is the ability to use data creatively to understand issues actually before they happen, so thereby increasing what's often referred to as aircraft availability, which is a precious asset for our customers. Now, EHM, or engine health monitoring, has been a feature of Rolls-Royce aero engines for decades. The latest EHM system of ours is capable of measuring thousands of parameters more than previous versions, and it's now able to monitor entirely new parts of the engine. So, for example, on the Pearl 15, which we spoke about recently, those engines can actually talk back, so to speak. They can respond to requests from the operational center to focus on a particular part or parameter and send back hundreds of hours of data specifically tailored to that request. So our latest EHM big data systems basically reach parts we haven't reached before and can deliver much greater detail on request. We can now not just monitor the turbo machinery, but monitor line replaceable units that are on the outside of the engine, such as variable stator vane actuators and sensors. Small parts, but still crucial to making sure that the engines are ready and available for flight. And we can predict when they need replacement rather than respond to their failure, so we can be much more proactive. And so, for example, let's just say an aircraft was on the ground and unable to start. What we can do now is get our engineering teams at our Rolls-Royce availability centres to ask for data related specifically to, say, the starting issues. And that engine responds by sending that data back, covering up to, say, 200 hours of specific data on that request. And because we get that greater level of granularity of detail instantly, then our engineering teams can work out what the solution is much more quickly.
So does the engine actually have a data storage capability?
They do to a certain extent, but in this case, what we're talking about is communicating with the engine when it's appropriately connected to get data from it.
So the engine doesn't talk by satellite?
Yes, it can be by satellite. On certain aircraft, we can plug into gate link systems, but yes, depends on what the data transmission service is available, depending on where the aircraft is, but there are multiple ways of doing it.
That's so interesting.
Another example of a different engine would be on the Trent XWB, where we've actually taken environmental learning forward with a better understanding of humidity and how that affects turbine gas temperatures to allow us to create new ways of being able to better predict part life and servicing. So one of the ways on a Trent XWB of predicting a service requirement is by reading this so-called TGT, the turbine gas temperature. But because that reading can be affected by humidity, it could make an engine appear to need maintenance earlier than is actually necessary. Now, what we've done is developed a new tool using coding apps within the Microsoft Azure cloud platform to rapidly assess an accurate humidity data for every airport that the Trent XWB serves and adjust it for that effect on TGT. So what that means is we can take that effect out and plan the number of cycles our Trent XWB engines can fly on wing much more accurately, thereby leading to increased availability for the customers. So it's another great way in how we're bringing a benefit to the customer from application of our big data and capability.
That really is interesting. I'm going to come back to, my final question, because you've been very kind to give me so much time. The big topic in the industry right now is coronavirus. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're hearing from the market?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a tricky situation. I think before I turn to the market and impacts there, then I think I'd like to stress and make sure everyone understands that our number one priority remains obviously the well-being of all our employees, and we're in close communication with our colleagues in affected areas, and we continue to take precautionary measures, including social distancing techniques where appropriate. In terms of the market, then clearly the situation is very, very dynamic, and there are no certain outcomes at the moment. So beyond stating the very obvious truth that this will have an impact on air traffic growth in the near term, you know, I'm not really in a position to give any detailed market analysis at this point. Clearly, we are modelling various scenarios within the business, as many others will be doing, but it's really hard to predict just where this is going to go. I think I would say that we remain in close contact with our customers, and we continue to support them. There's currently no disruption to our deliveries or our supply chain, but of course, we're actively monitoring that situation and making sure we take appropriate action.
I guess for people outside of the industry looking in, specifically like people, like travelers, is this going to be a 90-day thing, 6-month thing? What's your sense of it?
Your guess is as good as mine, Addison. We can clearly look to the past precedents, and it'll be a judgment as to whether or not there are indeed any precedents. But I think at this stage, it's really too early to be able to answer that question. If you know someone who does have the answer, please put them in our direction.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having a chat with me.
No problem. I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
This recording is copyrighted by Air Insight.